Hello, everybody, and welcome to the SoxProspects.com podcast. It is today we are recording on Wednesday, March the 9th, and coming to you from Sox Prospects Mid-Atlantic here in our nation's capital. My name is Chris Hatfield. Thank you for the download or the stream or whatever it is that you did so that you could get this prospecty goodness in your eardrums. We are very pleased to have another special guest today. Our last episode with Peter Abraham of the Boston Globe received a good reception, so we have another guest today in Jim Callis of MLB.com. We're very excited to talk to him about MLB.com's Red Sox top 30 prospects. Joining me, as always, first is our managing editor, Matt Hegel. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Chris. Excited to talk to Jim here. Coming up, should be a good time.
Absolutely, and we are also joined by our director of scouting, Ian Kundle. Hello, Ian.
Hey, guys. How are you doing? It's starting to feel like spring. So
it is.
Started to feel like summer today.
It's like 76 or 74 up here today. So
yeah,
that was
like
fun.
Crazy. Down here, too. It was nuts. Loving the spring weather. Ian, you will be in Fort Myers a week from today.
I will. I've seen a full day of baseball a week from today.
Matt, are you going to be Wednesday night or Thursday?
Thursday. Yeah, Thursday. Early Thursday. So I'll be there for games on Thursday.
Got it. All right. And then Mike and I and Matt Picard come in on Friday morning. I think that's when Will Woodward gets in as well. Chaz Fiorino gets in with Ian. We're going to have a full contingent down at camp this year. Should take a second to give a shout out to the, I guess now we're calling them the official band of the SoxProspects.com podcast, the Ludlow Thieves, for providing our music. You can get their EPs, To Travel, Skyline, and Sing Me Back on iTunes and on Amazon Music, although I think only a couple of them are on Amazon. It's kind of weird. But they're at least all on iTunes. Go check them out. They do some great stuff. I'm trying to think. There really isn't anything else to talk about, guys, I think, except just to present the people with our interview with Jim. But without further ado, here is our interview, our conversation, our chat with Jim Callis of MLB.com. All right, and now we have the pleasure of being joined by MLB.com prospect writer extraordinaire Jim Callis, joining us from sunny Arizona. Jim, thanks for coming on. It's always a pleasure to chat.
Yeah, no, it's always a joy talking to you guys, and I'll even plug you guys. I mean, I've been covering prospects for a long time, and you know, I wind up Googling a lot, trying to fill in pieces of information, you know, like maybe what a guy missed time with, or you know, a stray bonus for an international guy. And I do think you guys, anybody who reads your site, Red Sox fans are very fortunate. I don't think there's another site out there with as much detailed information on its favorite team's prospects as SoxProspects.com. I mean, you guys are so thorough. I can't tell you how many times I'm Googling like a little piece of information, it takes me to SoxProspects.com. I really enjoy your guys' stuff as well, too.
Oh, well, thank you. We appreciate that, Jim, and the check is in the mail. No, but in all seriousness.
Yeah, I'll look for it.
In all seriousness, no, it's great. We
appreciate that for sure.
Yeah, we've had a great relationship with you over the years, dating back to the BA days, and it's great to talk to you all the time. I guess with the Red Sox top 30 being released last week and their placement in the top 10 systems in the game, I guess the general way to start is, what is your kind of mile high view or outlook on the system at this point? Obviously, we know there's the kind of four studs at the top, and you know, it's a highly regarded system and a highly regarded set of young players beyond that. But what's your take on this after having worked on this top 30 and placing them among the game's other systems?
Yeah, I was thinking about, I think this is the 17th year in a row, going back to the first BA Prospect Handbook, that I've done a top 30 on the Red Sox. I did top 10s before that, so I've probably ranked over, you know, close to 600 Red Sox prospects over the years. But, wow. You know, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, the top four with Mankata and Devers and Benintendi and Espinoza, I think that's the best top four in baseball. I mean, you can, you know, the Rangers might have an argument there, but I think that's the best top four in baseball. And I do think the system's pretty top heavy. I mean, I like the top 10. You know, I think the Red Sox have one of the strongest top 10s in baseball. But on the flip side, if you were stacking up their 11 through 30, you know, for an organization that we ranked sixth overall in terms of the farm system as a whole, 11 through 30, I don't think are tremendous, you know, don't really stand out like some other organizations might. And I know I know you guys go even deeper on your website, but, you know, kind of filling out, you know, who's going to make, you know, 26 through 30 on the list. I was going with reliever. I mean, Bryce Brents is still on my list. You know, I have some relievers. Hey, I don't need to knock Bryce, but I mean, Bryce is what, 26 or 27 years old. I mean, we all thought, you know, if he was what he was supposed to be, he's 27. He wouldn't be eligible for this list anymore. So, but that said, I mean, I think part of that is obviously they've promoted a lot of guys to the big leagues in the last years. And I think it's amazing that you have a top four like they have, and you consider that they've promoted guys like Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts. And, you know, I've always had my prospect crush on Blake Swihart and Eduardo Rodriguez and Henry Owens. And I'm probably missing a couple guys. All those guys have been promoted, and they traded four prospects who would have made the list, you know, three of whom would have ranked, I think, very highly, you know, in the top, you know, 15 for sure. Two guys who are on our top 100 in the Kimbrel trade. So, I think it's kind of a tribute to the depth they did have, that they promoted all those guys and they traded a bunch of guys, and yet they still rank as the sixth best farm system and still have four guys who, you know, you can dream about becoming superstars. I mean, they have a legitimate superstar ceiling if everything works out.
And you know, drawing maybe a little bit on that experience you have with the system. I mean, my personal experience, I think, only goes back about a decade or 11 years. But as far as that depth, I think we've said on here our take is very similar as far as the top is as good as it's been, maybe, but it does thin out pretty quick. Can you remember the system ever being in this kind of, not shape, because I don't want to imply that it's this crisis or anything, but where it seems like it's at the top as strong as it's been, but maybe, you know, I look at, say, you know, Luis Alexander Basabe in that 8 to 10 group, and I just think that's a guy that I feel like should be lower than that. And then you look at some of the guys in the teens and in those 20s. It seems like maybe that area is about as thin as it's been in a little bit. Would you say that that's fair?
Yeah, I do. And again, I mean, I think that's because of the Kimbrel trade. They promoted guys. I don't think that the talent's drawn up. I do think that the depth of a system, a lot of times it's cyclical, because if you have good prospects, you're going to be promoting to the big leagues or trading. But I do think that's fair. I mean, it's funny. You brought up Basabe, and I remember running into Alex Speer at the winter meetings, who now does a list for BA. And we always, I used to be on his podcast when I did the top 30, and we always talk about, you know, putting the top 30 together. And we talked about Basabe, and I think Basabe is ninth on his list, and he's eighth on mine. Mm-hmm. And he had some people in his BA chat say, boy, you know, that's a lot higher than MLB.com. And Alex pointed out, you know, rightfully so, you know, we update our lists. Like, we'll update the list we just came out with in July, but then we don't touch it again until, you know, the end of February, beginning of March. And I was, like, kind of surprised, too. I was like, wow, you know, Basabe, that seems pretty high. You know, I hadn't really, you know, until you actually put your list together, unless it's a constant process, you don't really think, like, okay, where's this guy going to fit or that guy going to fit? It's like when people ask me, you know, how good is this organization? Where's this farm system rank? Until you actually sit down and line them up, it's hard to say. And so when all was said and done, I wound up putting Basabe, you know, one spot ahead of Alex. Yeah, I had him eighth on my list. I think our top tens are actually, you know, and this is coincidental, identical, except I have Basabe 8 and Marrero 9, and he flipped them. But, yeah, and I look at guys like, you know, Travis Lakins, who's interesting, but, you know, I have Travis Lakins 11th on my list, you know, and that's a lot higher than I would have expected. I mean, I do think the system's, you know, the weakness that jumps out at me is starting pitchers. I mean, once you get past, I mean, obviously Espinosa is very intriguing, and Kopech's a guy who can make the top 100, and I still think Brian Johnson's decent. And after that, it's like a drop-off. I never would have thought when I began the process that I would have had Travis Lakins at 11, or a guy like, you know, I mean, he's interesting. You know, Ronyo Rodas, who's pitched, what, four starts in the Gulf Coast League, who I had never really heard a whole lot about before this year, and he's number 14 on my list. It's kind of, you know, once you get past the first 10 or so guys feel like they're about 5 or 10 spots too high in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that last sentence is exactly how I feel with some of these guys, too.
I kind of look like, it's like you cut out five prospects and forgot to paste them back in where they were supposed to be. And that's why everyone.
Well, which is, I guess, the Kimbrel trade. I mean, Kimbrel trades four of them right there. And I think, I mean, again, we'll see how the trade works out. But I mean, you know, if we were doing this list, you know, Margot and Guerra would be fifth and sixth on our list, you know, behind the big four. And then, you know, I mean, Michael Kopech would look like a real interesting number seven guy, and Brian Johnson would be eight. But, you know, Basabe would still be in the top 10. But then, I mean, Logan Allen, I'll be honest, would probably be you know, even if I kept him behind Michael Chavis, that would make him 13. You know, so Travis Lakin all of a sudden is 14. And then, you know, I have Mauricio Dubon and Marco Hernandez currently at 12 and 13. And you could argue the merits of Carlos Asuaje, you know, versus them. I mean, they're probably better shortstops and they can hit a little bit too. So maybe I put Asuaje behind them. But I mean, that's, you know, four of the Red Sox top 17 prospects all went in one trade.
All right, and we'll get back to our interview with Jim Callis of MLB.com. But first, we've got to talk about SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the official sponsor of the SoxProspects.com podcast. And you know what, guys? We know it can be frustrating sometimes buying tickets online. It can be complicated. Fees, it's a hassle. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell tickets to sporting events, concerts, anything you want to buy tickets for. I've used SeatGeek, in fact, to get Bruins tickets here in D.C., and I check it whenever I look to buy tickets. They've taken the work out of shopping for those great seats. They do three things. First, SeatGeek pulls all the tickets available from other sites into one place. It's one-stop shopping. Same deal as Kayak or Trivago for travel. Save time, never miss a deal, and you can also set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if the ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek gets a grade based on the value for that seat, so you can immediately find the best deals. They have a little like green color when it's a really good deal, or it's a red color when it's a really bad deal. It's super easy, even a kid could figure it out. You can use their maps to even see the view from your seat before you buy. And best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the prices you're going to pay. Unlike some sites, SeatGeek shows you the full ticket price from the second you start your search, and it never surprises you with huge fees at checkout. Here's the best part, everybody. We got a deal for you. Save yourself some money and give some love to the podcast. Here's what you do. You download the free SeatGeek app. You go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, and you're going to enter this code. It's SP20, SP20. And if you do that, SeatGeek is going to send you a $20 rebate after you've made your first purchase. Again, it's SP20. Download the SeatGeek app. Enter that code, $20 back in your pocket after you make your first purchase. So go on, everybody. Help yourself out. Help us out. Get a great night out and go to the game. SeatGeek. Get the app. Get your tickets. And have a great evening at the game. Now, let's get back to our interview with Jim Callis of MLB.com.
Yeah, I guess looking at those top four more closely, how tight was the competition for that top spot in your mind? Was it all four sort of in the running, or was it just the Moncada Devers, or was it just Moncada? Did he stand out for you?
It was tough. I mean, I do think you can kind of come up with arguments to put those guys in probably any order you want. You know, it's funny, like the top, we do things a little differently than BA. We do our top 100 list before we do the team list. And in BA, it was the other way around. And so with the top 100, and this was true also at BA, you know, it's a cloud, you know, there's a bunch of people voting. And so they're kind of locked in. Although you do have some say, since I did the Red Sox list, if I felt like the order came out, like I was vehemently against something with the order on the top 100 with the Red Sox prospects, I could speak up, but I personally would have lined them up the same way. I mean, I do think Moncada is the most well-rounded of those guys, and he can play the infield. So, I mean, to me, that would be why I would put him number one. You know, it's funny. I do have Benintendi behind Devers, but I could see you can make a case for Benintendi too, because he's an up-the-middle guy. I mean, you know, his arm is probably average. Everything else could be better than average. You know, Devers is more of a bat who, you know, could be an average defender at third and might play first. You could argue, I think, those two back and forth. And you could certainly, with Espinoza, you know, I think it's easier to put him four. Well, what order do you guys have those four in on your list?
I think we have them in the same order you do. Yeah. Oh, no, we have Espinoza ahead of Benintendi, actually. But, I mean,
Yeah, I was going to say with Espinoza, I mean, even though he's four, and I think it's easier to put him fourth because he's the least developed and the youngest of the guys. I mean, I know you guys have talked to people and seen him too. I've never seen him pitch in person, but I've talked to a lot of people who have. And you talk to people and they tell you, you know, he's sitting 94, 97 and reaching 100, and the curveball could be plus and the changeup could be plus, and he throws a lot of strikes. And oh, by the way, I hate to put this comp on him, but if I'm going to make a comp, you know, I might say Pedro Martinez. Well, yeah, you could argue that guy for being number one also. You know, so, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, I cannot remember a pitcher. I mean, well, I guess the last pitcher I can remember with that much buzz that young was Felix Hernandez. You know, I just don't remember. I mean, even Urias didn't quite grab, I don't think grabbed everybody by storm like Espinoza did in his first year in the United States.
Well, it's one of those, I saw him at Instructs this year. And it was up at the Orioles complex, and the entire Red Sox front office was there. And just people you would never expect are just behind the plate. The entire Orioles front office is there watching. You know, there's like 25 scouts watching. And as Espinoza, the first inning, comes out, and he's pumping like 90, 91 with the first one, everyone's like, what's this? Second batter of the game, 99 on the hands. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that'll play. When you're running a 99-mile-per-hour fastball up and in on the hands. I think it was Ryan Mountcastle who was the Orioles first round pick last year, maybe, or second round pick.
Yeah, one of them. Yeah, one of the second first round pick.
Yeah, he started the pitch like right over the inside corner and ended up in the hand, shattered the bat, and we ground out to shortstop, and everyone's like, oh dear, that's you don't see that very often, that kind of movement, that kind of stuff out of at the time a 17-year-old. It's absurd.
Yeah, and it's gonna be interesting. I mean, I think the tricky part, it's hard to manage a guy who's that good, that young. You know, who's not full, you know, he's not a big guy to begin with, you know, and he's what, I guess I think he turned 18 today as we record this, as I'm looking here at my notes. Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do with him? I mean, I would think you probably don't want him exceeding 100 innings this year in the minors. I mean, that's what you would do with him if he was a high school kid. He only pitched 58 last year. And I mean, I'm not sure you guys get asked all the time, so, you know, how could this guy be in Fenway? Could be in Fenway in 2017. Well, I think they're going to try to slow him down a little bit. I would be shocked if he began the season anywhere other than Greenville. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he ended the year in Greenville, because he's only going to be 18. And, you know, it's so hard to, I think, to, you know, I remember when I was at Baseball America doing a column on Felix Hernandez, and the Mariners have this dilemma too, where it's like he's so good, so young, that you don't want to rush him and you don't want to put too many innings on him. But it's also hard to hold, you know, somebody that talented back. So I'll be very interested to see, you know, what they do with him this year. But, you know, I know at least on Twitter, Red Sox fans are acting like he could be up in September. He's that good and he's so special, and he is special. But I think they're going to try to keep it very, very slow with him.
That makes sense. The stat I love with him is that when he made that one start in Greenville, he was 13 months younger than anybody else in the South Atlantic League.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. You know, and it's, but like I said, you know, when Felix Hernandez was 17, now he went to the Northwest League right off the bat and was good. And then he went to the Midwest League, kind of went low class A at the end of the year, like Anderson did, and was really good in two starts. And then the next year, they were trying to hold him back. But, I mean, he pitched his way to Double A and pitched 150 innings. And then the next year, he was in the big leagues by midseason to stay. So, I don't think he's going to move that quick. But those guys that are that talented may change the timetable.
Yeah, he's definitely a bit of an anomaly. It's hard to sort of think of past precedent for what could go happen with him moving forward. But I wanted to ask you about the top prospect again, Moncada. What position do you ultimately see him playing? Because, I mean, I think for the most part, you know, he's been okay, fine at second, and I think, you know, most people think he has a good chance to stick there. But on the other hand, will there that even be a possibility? You know, will it depend more on opportunity, basically, more than ability?
Yeah, I think that's the best way of putting it. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to win a Gold Glove, but he's certainly athletic enough and has the tools to at least be an average second baseman. But I mean, who knows when, you know, I mean, you know, they already had a guy who came up as a great second base prospect who had moved to the outfield in Betts. And, you know, I don't know, you know, Pedroia, you know, is probably going to end his career in Boston. I mean, he seems to determine to do that. And I mean, shoot, we all, you know, we've watched Pedroia for a number of years. I mean, you know, I mean, he's what, signed through 2021. He's 32 years old. I mean, he's not in the prime of his career, but I mean, that's a guy who's never going to stop fighting. So, I mean, he might be at second base for, I don't know, conservatively, what, at least three more years, right? I mean, he signed for six. I think it's just, you know, when he's ready, they'll find a spot for him. And I think he's going to be ready probably at some point in 2017. You know, and whether that spot winds up being the outfield, whether that, you know, whether that spot winds up being third base because, you know, Pablo Sandoval, you know, doesn't get it going. You know, I think that's a possibility. But I think it remains to be seen. But yeah, I mean, I think the nice thing is, you know, kind of like Mookie Betts, the bat and the speed, you know, he's going to provide enough offense. Even if you want to put him in left field, you're still going to come out ahead in terms of offense. So it's not like he's a, you know, a big part of his appeal is the defensive ability up the middle, and he's like a 270, 10 home run guy. You know, he's going to be better than that.
What level do you see him beginning this season? I mean, does he have a good shot to start Portland? I think we originally were sort of projecting high A, but it seems like he's gotten some major league play this year. So have you sort of heard anything on that?
I haven't heard anything. I would think my guess would be it would probably be high A, or at least that would be my suspicion, and then promote him. You know, if he tears it up for 2 months, you can always promote him in June. But you know, if he's playing second base, you know, I would just think that Wendell Rio would probably start the year in Portland, and then Mankata would start the year in high A. But, you know, once Mankata's ready to be promoted, you know, I like Wendell Rio too, but Wendell Rio is going to, you know, have to play somewhere else because Mankata's going to come up. So I would think he'd get at least a month or two in high A, but you never know.
Even just because of weather concerns, you might think to keep him out of Portland for those first couple months or something.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't think it's as much of a concern for a hitter, but, you know, I think also, too, I mean, the Red Sox have been pretty consistent, I think, as talented as he is, with trying to manage expectations with him also, since they signed him for $63 million in bonuses and penalty tax, where, you know, he began the year in extended spring, and they kept him in low A the whole year, even when he was tearing it up at the end. So I would think they're going to continue to be kind of cautious with him. And then I think if he's going to be one of those guys, well, they'll move him slowly, and then he'll advance in a rush. Like, if you told me that he ultimately wound up jumping from Double A to the big leagues, I don't think that's impossible either. I just think these guys, you know, and just like we were talking about Espinoza, who are so talented, it's hard to put a timetable or say, okay, this is the development plan. He's going to pitch this many innings here and this many innings there. They're sometimes so good, you can't hold them back. And I think I think Benintendi might be one of those guys too. I mean, if Benintendi comes out and looks anywhere, you know, if he looks like he did at Arkansas and then in pro ball last year, how are you going to hold that guy back?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Moncada's got all the tools, but would you say that Devers is the best pure hitter, in your opinion, in the system?
I don't know if I'd say that. I mean, Benintendi might be the best pure hitter in the system. I mean, they've got a lot of, I mean, Sam Travis is a pretty good pure hitter too. So I don't think I would say he is. I think he's the best power hitting prospect in the system. And he does have some pure hitting ability. That's what's nice about him. He's not just, okay, you know, this guy's going to swing for the fences and be a power guy. I mean, he has a chance to be a solid, you know, all around hitter. And you know, the reports I had on him were, you know, he improved defensively, and I don't think he's a lock to stay third, but whereas a year ago, I think most of the people I talked to would say, nah, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of questioning him at third. Now it's like, you know what? He might be an average third baseman, you know, if he doesn't wind up getting too big.
May as well ask about the last of the big four and Benintendi, who you talked about a little bit. But the thing that's surprising to me, Jim, and maybe not, it shouldn't have been surprising, I guess, going into the offseason, but to me, you got a guy who's the, you know, consensus collegiate player of the year, more or less. I mean, when Golden Spikes, Tickhauser, all of the, you know, key collegiate player of the year awards, and comes in, and I mean, you could argue, not that I'm not saying I would hold this view, but you could argue he probably should have gone straight to Greenville, but goes to Lowell after a week or two of adjustment, tears it up there, goes to Greenville and probably plays better. But still, this is, you know, still the collegiate player of the year. I get that he did great, and I get the scouting too, but I guess I was a little bit surprised at him getting ranked this highly and considered this positively this quickly. I guess, not am I wrong, but, you know, should it have been as surprising as it was, or is that kind of, maybe I'm just not used to the Red Sox drafting a guy who, if you redrafted, would probably go in the top four or top five.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. I mean, and I think that's it's fair because, I mean, they haven't picked high in the draft. I mean, I still think, you know, they picked him 7th, they picked Trey Ball 7th. I think the last time they picked that high was Trot Nixon, who was 7. And I think the last time they picked higher than 7th was like Mike Garman back in 1968 or something. So, I mean, you're right, you know, and I think the debut, and it's one thing I try to do, and sometimes it's hard, especially when the guy hits 11 homers in 50-something games, and it looks great. And I was not guilty of this with him, is I always tell people when we're doing top 100s, whether it's a BA or MLB pipeline, you can't get too high or low on a guy's pro debut. If the guy's coming out of the draft, you should rank him consistent to what you thought he was coming out of the draft, unless he does something crazily good or crazily bad that changes your outlook. But, I mean, you know, the Red Sox had Benintendi, you know, 2nd on their draft board behind Dansby Swanson. And, you know, I'm surprised. I guess looking back, I'm almost surprised he lasted 7 picks. I'm not second-guessing anybody, but just I look at the Astros. And, you know, and the Astros are as analytical as any team, you know, and they look at, you know, numbers, you know, college statistics in the draft. And I like Kyle Tucker, but, like, there's no way right now, like, if you gave him, not that Kyle Tucker is, and he's a top 100 prospect, but I wouldn't even hesitate if you're saying, would you rather have Andrew Benintendi, who's a college center fielder, who could be a five-tool guy, I guess 4 tools and an average arm. Would you rather have Kyle Tucker, who there's more risk because he's a high school guy and he's a corner outfielder and he's not, I mean, he's a good hitter, but he's not the athlete that Benintendi is. That's not even a question to me. And I'm kind of surprised. I thought the Astros might take Benintendi, especially when they were doubling up on high school outfielders and everybody knew they were going to get Daz Cameron in the supplemental first round. But, you look at Benintendi, I mean, all the tools are there. I think part of the reason he lasted as long as he did, and it's funny because I think everybody behind the Red Sox, I think the White Sox might take him even though they like college pitchers. I know the Cubs definitely would have taken him. I mean, there were teams hoping for Benintendi. Everybody wanted Benintendi. And all spring when I talked to people about Benintendi, he went from, hey, this guy's a chance to go in the first round to, hey, you know, he's in our mix at 20 to, hey, we're not going to get a shot at him to, okay, now he's going to go 12. No, he's going to go 10. No, he's going to go 8. You know, and mm-hmm. He kept moving up. And I think the only thing that worked against him a little bit was the lack of track record,
right?
Because he was a draft-eligible sophomore who was banged up as a freshman, hit just 1 home run, and they took the summer off to kind of get in better shape and recover. So it's not like you saw him play in the Cape with Wood. And it's not like you had, you know, 2 or 3 years of him dominating the SEC. You had 1 year. And track record matters to teams, I think, some at the top of the draft. So I think, you know, we'll see what happens with Trey Ball. I mean, I know at the time the Red Sox were elated to get Trey Ball, and now he's kind of an enigma. But I think Benintendi's going to be a guy where you look back and Red Sox are going to say, boy, that was a good year to pick 7. It's like in the NFL, I'm a huge Steelers fan, and I think the highest draft pick the Steelers have had in a long time, if not mistaken, was the year they picked 11th. There happened to be 3 really good quarterbacks in the draft, and they got Ben Roethlisberger at 11, if I have my NFL draft memory correct. And it was just like, it was fortuitous timing. Any other year, you know, if there's fewer quarterbacks or they, you know, were bad in a different year instead of that one, they don't get Ben Roethlisberger. And I think we may look back 5 years from now and go, you know what, you know, maybe it wasn't fun if you're a Red Sox fan to watch him finish last in 2014. But, you know, we got Andrew Benintendi out of it, so that worked out pretty well in the end.
Just to fact-check that, Jim, you are absolutely correct. That would be the 2004 NFL draft in which Roethlisberger went 11th, and that was the Eli
Manning. And I don't think they've picked anywhere near that high since then.
Yeah, so.
They did pick, though, someone very important in Red Sox history.
Huh?
The Steelers. The Steelers have a player on their roster who actually has played
Senquez Goldson, who got hurt.
Oh, that's right.
Yep. He's one of the key figures in the when Mookie Betts goes into the Hall of Fame. His uncold story.
Yeah, I still think they might have signed Mookie Betts. I think the guy they would not have signed who wound up creating them all kinds of headaches was Cody Kukoc. But I think they still might have signed Mookie Betts, even had they given Senquez Goldson $1 million. But, you know, well, I guess we'll never know for sure.
Don't ruin our fairy tale, Jim. Anyway, next guy on the list, and we're not going to go down the whole list, but I guess recent news. brought him a little bit to the forefront was the number five prospect, Michael Kopech, the right-hander, and obviously missed the last 50 games of last season due to a suspension for violating the minor league drug policy. He came back in instructs and really impressed a lot of people, and this year was poised to come in. And I think poor Alex actually wrote a piece that went up on Baseball America earlier this week about how he was kind of trying to redeem himself this year. And it comes out that he broke his hand in an altercation with his roommate. Not necessarily, I guess, first of all, and just for the sake of having to ask it, were there any makeup concerns before the draft? Not that we're hearing there were any. And I guess the more important question, the more interesting question is, it's looking like he may now miss, at least dating back to the suspension, a year of development time, if not this entire season, depending on what the prognosis is. What does that do to his development and his prospect stock?
No. I mean, there were no makeup concerns on him, none of that. I mean, obviously, you don't want to see him testing positive for stimulants. I don't recall, you guys may know better than me, what he said afterward, whether it was the old, I didn't realize I was taking it, or I take responsibility. You know, you hear that sometimes, or I take responsibility. I don't know what his explanation, if there was one. And I mean, you know, this altercation, I mean, none of this is good, and you don't want to see it. On the other hand, he's 19 years old. So, I mean, you do some stupid stuff when you're 19 years old. Hopefully you don't break your hand. But, you know, I mean, it's, I guess, and I'm not making light of what he's done, but, I mean, hey, this isn't Cody Kukoc, who I just invoked before. Who would have thought I would have brought up Cody Kukoc twice in the podcast? I mean, this isn't John Denny. This isn't John Egan. You know, it's, do you wish it didn't happen? Yes. Do you... does it affect what he's going to become long term, or does it worry? It doesn't worry me, you know, in terms of his long term prognosis. From a development standpoint, yeah, I mean, you didn't want him. You know, he pitched 65 innings last year. I'm sure they would have liked him to pitch 100. You know, you would have liked him probably to pitch, I don't know, in the neighborhood of 120, 125 this year, which again will be difficult. You know, we're still waiting to hear how long the hand will keep him out, but you know, long term, it shouldn't affect him. I mean, there are things you can do. Yeah, you can get in better physical shape. I mean, I'm sure Michael will be doing a lot of running while his hand is broken and doing a lot. And so his legs will probably get a lot stronger. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, is it optimal? No. But I don't see any reason to think that he's going to come back from this and he's not going to be throwing in the mid-90s and he's not going to have a wipeout breaking ball at times. You know, it's just, well, what it hurts is for a guy like him, he's not the most polished guy in the world. He needs to work on the command and control. He needs work on the changeup. And, you know, you lost about 30 or 40 innings last year. And, you know, you may lose, you know, 60 to 120 this year. But at least I think it'd be more worrisome if it was a hitter. Because, you know, losing at bats, I think, is worse than losing innings. And if you wanted a silver lining, well, I mean, it's less wear and tear on his arm when he's a really young guy. So maybe it keeps him healthier in the long run.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to the guy you mentioned as potentially the best, one of the best pure hitters in Sam Travis. He obviously had a really good season, and by all accounts, really, you know, sort of looks like he could be a really good hitter. But on the other hand, he's a first base only guy. So, I mean, the standard is obviously higher there, and hasn't shown a lot of power. So is this a guy the Red Sox might be planning to have as a future, you know, first tier type starting first baseman, or you know, do you see him more as sort of a bench player?
I think he's a guy. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be an all-star, but I could see him being their starting first baseman. I mean, the numbers he put up last year, where he hit .307 with a .381 on base and a .452 slugging. I'm not saying he's definitely going to duplicate those in the big leagues, but it's not out of the question, man. I do think he's a plus hitter. He has hit doubles, and he is a strong guy. I mean, he's 6'0", 205. He's got strength. He's got bat speed. I think it's more a matter of approach. I mean, he more kind of works on hitting the ball hard, gap to gap, rather than trying to swing for the fences and turn the ball. But, you know, if he hits 300 with a .375 on base percentage and slugged around .450, you'd take that at first base, I think. I mean, you know, I don't think that would necessarily be a guy you'd bat, you know, 3, 4, 5 in your lineup. But, you know, I think it's possible he could evolve into a similar hitter. You know, perhaps even like Kevin Youkilis, who when he was coming up was not a guy that people thought was going to have much power. And you know, there were some questions, you know, exactly, you know, yeah, I think people were even skeptical of him when he, if I remember correctly, I think when he first came up to the big leagues, or maybe it was when he first got to AAA, everybody knew, okay, this is the Greek god of walks. He's got a patient eye. I think it was AAA, and everybody threw him a ton of first pitch strikes because they knew he'd take it, and he wound up having to make some adjustments. But, you know, I mean, Euclid, you know, first couple of years he was a regular. He was hitting about 15 homers a year, and then he was a 20, 25 home run guy. And I think, I'm not saying Travis is going to be as good as Euclid, but I mean, I think he has the potential. I mean, I think that's his upside. I mean, he could be a Euclid type of guy who hits 280 to 300 with a high on base percentage and a very solid slugging percentage. And maybe he eventually, you know, in his prime becomes a 25 home run guy. But, you know, I think if he hits 280 with 15 homers and draws a ton of walks and makes consistent contact, that'll play first base, I think.
I guess obviously we can't go down every guy on the list, but there's a few guys who, you know, certainly people like to compare lists and all that stuff. But I think we kind of agree with you that it's sort of a crapshoot from maybe about 11 or so on. But just some guys who I thought, you know, it was interesting to see your take on them, maybe because based on how you ranked them. I guess the first guy that has had a lot of helium this offseason, I think in large part because of how he performed at the Fall Instructional League, is Travis Lakins, who you have at 11 and who I think I forget where we've got him, but, you know, kind of with a, you know, ticket to rise depending on what we see at spring training next week. But what are you hearing on him that led you to rank him there as the drafted in the sixth round out of the Ohio State University as a draft eligible sophomore? Right.
Terrible.
Yeah, and you guys have him at 23, and I'll be honest, had I, you know, been asked, you know, hey, when you do this, what do you think? I mean, that's about what I probably would have thought. I would have put him two. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. you know, and I do think, while he's interesting, I mean, heard great things about him. You know, he was a guy who was very good in summer ball in 2014, went into his sophomore season at Ohio State as draft-eligible sophomore, and, you know, people thought, okay, this guy could be a top three rounds guy, and his stuff just wasn't as good last spring. You know, he's not the biggest guy in the world, you know, like 6'1", 180, you know, not tiny, but he's athletic, and the Red Sox, you know, took him in the sixth round, signed him above slot for $320,000. He pitched a whopping two innings at Lowell in his pro debut. But the reports I had from Instructional League were, I mean, he basically got the stuff back that would have made him that top three round pick. I mean, 92, 94, consistently with a fastball with good life and topping out 96. And he had a really good slider the summer before. Now he's gotten more of a downer curveball that shows some good potential. You know, showed some upside with the changeup too. And it kind of came about, you know, like I said, I mean, I know Michael Chavis didn't have a great year last year, but I liked it coming out of the draft, and he did hit for power. I think he can find a happy medium where, you know, he maybe tones down the approach and still hits for power and hits for more average. So I had a clear top 10. And after that, to me, it was kind of wide open. And, you know, I don't even know. I mean, like I said, I'm looking at the guys I have behind him. I have, you know, Mauricio Dubon and Marco Hernandez, who I like both of those guys, but they're probably maybe, you know, more utility infielders. And it wasn't like they were, you know, highly ranked before. And, you know, we alluded to earlier, Ronyel Rodas is 14 and Pat White is 15. And Josh Ockney hasn't gotten a full season ball. I had him at 16. I just, you know, after 10, it was kind of like, wow, this is really wide open. And I just got more, I think, positive, consistent reviews on Travis Lakins. So I rolled the dice with his big one or two innings of pro experience.
Yeah, actually, don't forget the one inning he threw in the Gulf Coast League playoffs, Jim. That's three whole innings.
That's right. So he hit three. That's right.
Yeah, I guess I ask you about another guy you just mentioned, Ronyel Rodas, come up a couple times. But, you know, he's had such minimal exposure stateside. He had, you know, real good stats for the most part in the DSL. But just kind of wondering what you heard and what kind of gave you that confidence pushing him that high.
Yeah, I mean, it's – and again, on these guys, I think it almost might be less confidence and more somebody had to rank 14. And I don't mean that to downplay him, but, I mean, you know, I mean, I think he's got very advanced control for a teenager. I mean, he's not a big physically imposing guy. You know, but he's added about 5 miles an hour since they signed him out of the Dominican. I mean, I'm sorry, out of Nicaragua. You know, and he kind of has, you know, a fastball that kind of sits around average, and he should get a little stronger, and he can really locate it well. And he's got a downer curveball and a fading changeup and advanced feel. I mean, he's more, I think he's probably stands out more if you're lining guys up. The guys on this list, he probably has a higher floor just because of his feel for pitching, and he already shows you the makings of three pitches. You know, I don't think he's a high ceiling guy because I don't think he's going to throw 95, and I don't think he's going to have a hammer curveball. But he's just an advanced pitcher, and I wound up going with him. I mean, the guys behind him are mostly relief pitchers or guys who haven't advanced that far either in the system, and so I guess I kind of rolled the dice. I was impressed, I guess, most of all by that precocious feel for pitching. You just don't see 18-year-olds who have that kind of feel usually. So, like I said, I mean, it's you could debate, we could debate these guys at the end because it's just all over the place. And I think you guys have him kind of around the same range, don't you?
No, I think we've actually got him way down, but it's kind of
okay.
It's more of a, it's one of those things that someone on our forum asked about some of the guys, and it's just, or it might have been Twitter, and I think my response was just kind of that shruggy face text thing where it's just after 11, if you've got him 11th and I've got him 40th, I'm not going to say that one of us is wrong. You know?
Yeah, I guess you guys have him 43rd, and I guess I'll just throw out there too, like so we update our list in July, and then after that we leave the list alone, but if there's a trade, we'll pull the guys off. So like when the Kimbrel trade gets made, you know, mm-hmm. four guys come off our list and we'll put four new guys on there. And we didn't have Rodas on our top 30 before I began, you know, the major revamp of our list. You know, Lakins was on the end of the list. So, I mean, at the end of last season, had you asked me about him, I would have said, he probably right. doesn't make my list. And then I wound up putting him 14th.
Well, I think, Ian, so. You saw him at Instructs, right? And we were just kind of meh.
Yeah, I saw him. No, I saw him twice, actually, and at Instructs. He threw twice while we were down there. And what I wrote up was pretty much exactly what you said, except I kind of look at it that he could probably handle Greenville next year, but I don't think they'll send him there. I think he'll go to Lowell. And when you've got a 17-year-old pitcher who's not going to be in full season ball this year, we kind of looked at it that there's time, you know, give him some time to progress up the system. You don't want to jump. I didn't want to jump him too high and then get all these people excited. Then have a guy who's, you know, 3-4 years away from even making it to the high minors. So
yeah. The nice thing
agree,
is we can also edit things when we get back from Fort Myers and you know, we edit them once a month, whereas you're stuck with what you've got until July, like you said. So I think that plays a big part too.
Yeah, no. And literally our report is like, we have low 90s fastball, advanced feel for curveball and low fastball command or fastball control. Easy to see why Excel did the complex leagues, you know, cause he's way more polished than the hitters he's facing. Just,
right. I mean,
it's basically
at that
the
level,
same
if
report.
You can throw more than one pitch for a strike, you're going to have a lot of success. So
exactly. Yeah. If you can throw a fastball and spin a breaking ball, even doesn't matter how old you are. If you're pitching against complex league hitters, you're going to do well.
One more guy that I was curious about, Jim, and maybe I'll do one and then Matt, you can do one and then we'll kind of wrap up. But Teddy Stankiewicz didn't make the cut for the top 30. And I was just curious, obviously not a guy that his numbers have stood out or even necessarily the repertoire, but it seems like he's a guy who opinions have varied a little bit on. What was your kind of feel on the reports on him?
Yeah, he did have some support. I mean, it's funny, and there's at least one guy, I won't name names, but one guy I talked to within the Red Sox system who was kind of pushing for him, but I guess the reason why I'm not putting him on the list is I just don't see anything to really hang his hat on, to be honest with you. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't really see anything that I would, you know, his stuff went backwards last year for one. I really don't see anything, any of his pitches that you're going to say is going to be a plus pitch. He throws strikes. I mean, that's probably the thing he does best is he throws strikes and that's great. But like he's, you know, he throws strikes with very hittable stuff and he gets hit. So I had him on some of the various iterations of the list. And then the more I looked at it, you take guys on and off the list, you know, especially, you know, as we've been saying, this list is crazy on the back end because you can, you know, it's just so unsettled after the first 10 guys. And mm-hmm. I just was thinking about it. It's like, you know, the guy doesn't miss bats. You know, if he gets better, you know, he might have like, you know, some 50s and 55s, but I, you know, the stuff's gone backwards. He got hit pretty hard last year. He's not missing bats. I just had a hard time trying to project, like, do I even think that guy could be a fifth start in the big leagues? Not right now. And it's not like he's got a dynamic pitch that's going to make him this weapon in relief. So, you know, I mean, if we went, I think you guys go what, 40 or 60 deep? Like if we went that deep, I mean, he'd certainly be on the list, but I couldn't bring myself to quite put him on the top 30.
And how about Trey Ball? I mean, we mentioned him earlier. I was kind of thinking while you were talking about route, I see maybe the opposite of that, where he just sort of doesn't quite have the feel for pitching, but he has the athleticism, obviously, and some, you know, a lot of the tools. At this point, is the best case scenario back end starter, or I mean, is that even pushing it a bit?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like, you know, I put him 19th. That's kind of, you know, and this is probably not the best way to do it, but, you know, I will say, you know, if Trey Ball was like a fifth round pick out of high school, I probably wouldn't put him on the list. Is that, you know, and that's probably a bad way to do it, but, you know, this guy was a seventh overall pick in the draft, so I maybe cut him some slack a little bit for that, but, you know, I honestly don't know what to make of him. I mean, he's still big and athletic and projectable. He's still pretty young, but the stuff's gone backwards from where it was in high school when he was a two-way guy. I mean, he just sounds like very vanilla. You know, at least he's left-handed, but, you know, I mean, I heard a lot of 88 to 91 and straight with the fastball, and, you know, the curveball was not very good, so he started messing around with a slider, and, I mean, probably best pitch right now might be the changeup. You know, not throwing, even though he's athletic. You know, I don't think the delivery's got anything horribly wrong with it. He's not throwing strikes. You know, I don't know what to make of him, but he's on probation for this year. You know, if he has another year like he did last year, he probably isn't on this list. And to be honest, if they hadn't promoted so many guys and made the Kimbrel trade, he'd probably be closer to 30 than, you know, where he is right now at 19. Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. I guess, you know, we've been asking you about guys, Jim, but, you know, you use the term prospect crush. I know where your former colleague at BA, John Manuel, is fond of the term personal cheese ball. Do you have anybody in this system who's kind of your, you know, kind of catches your eye, or who maybe you have as a favorite right now?
Yeah, I mean, well, and I don't know if I'd call it a prospect crush. You know, when I did the top 50 prospect show for MLB Network, my prospect crush, we did a segment, was actually on Andrew Benintendi. But I will say the one guy who I kind of feel like, I won't say I like him more than the Red Sox do. I just feel like I'm higher on him. And he wasn't going to be on my list. And literally the last guy I talked to in the Red Sox organization said, you know who needs to be on your list? Is Henry Ramos. And I was like, I love Henry Ramos. You just made my day, because I was thinking I shouldn't have him on the list. And I'd asked about him, and I hadn't gotten, like, I mean, the Red Sox like him, but it wasn't like, yeah, you got to have that guy on the list. It's like more kind of like, hey, he needs to stay healthy, improve some things. And you know, I was told, this guy looks great in camp. He looks unbelievable. I think he's going to break out. And I told the guy, I was like, this is awesome. I'm putting him back on the list. I just need somebody to affirm that. But I don't know. I always feel like I look at Henry Ramos. What is he, like 6'2", 220 now? He's a switch hitter, and he's athletic. I mean, you know, he's not a plus runner, and he's not a center fielder. But, I mean, I do think that somewhere in there, and maybe he doesn't get there, but I do think, and he was starting to show signs of this before he got hurt in 2014, there might be like a 275, 15 to 20 home run guy who can, you know, play both corners, and he's got the right field arm. And he intrigues me. So I know that if you were to ask the Red Sox, who like that would be the guy I probably like more than them. The other guy who I wouldn't call it a crush, but a guy who I think has a chance to be a sleeper, he only pitched half as many innings as Lakin's last year, was Mark Brakman. He pitched a whopping one inning in the Gulf Coast League. I don't know if he pitched in the playoff game, but yeah, I don't know about you guys. I was surprised they signed him last year. I mean, this was a guy who had led the Cape Cod League in strikeouts the year before. Went back to Stanford, you know, looked like this guy was a lock to go in the first two rounds. I mean, they missed 6 weeks with a sore shoulder. And when Boston took him in the 16th round, I figured, okay, they're just taking a late-round flyer. You know, he's going to Stanford. He's not going to sign. And they signed him for $225,000. I mean, he was another guy who I think was very good in the instructional league. You know, sitting 91, 94, you know, touching 96 with heavy sink. He's got a really good changeup. He's got kind of a slurvy breaking ball. And it'll be interesting, because I think the Red Sox are kind of split on him right now. Is, you know, he's got control and he's got three pitches, so he might be a starter. But I also know that there are people in the organization who think that if you put him in the bullpen, he might get to the big leagues very, very quickly. So I'll be curious to see. To me, he's kind of my my sleeper who I think could make a big, I think he can make a jump up the top 30, but also jump up the system. And you know, by the end of the year, we might be talking about Mark Breakman as the guy who can help the Red Sox in 2017.
Yeah, that's kind of, it's funny. Mike Andrews, who's the editor-in-chief of the website, and I had this back and forth. He assumed they were going to sign him, and I was with you where I didn't think there was any chance they would sign him, never mind for, you know, $225,000, and then he didn't pitch at all. So he's kind of an enigma wrapped in a riddle, tied up with a whatever the saying is, a puzzle or something like that. But yeah, I have no idea what to make of him myself either. Matt, did you want to maybe throw one more in, and then we'll let Jim get back to his writing about what he's seeing out in Arizona right now?
Yeah, well, yeah, just as a sort of a corollary off that one, were there a couple guys that was hard to leave off at the end there? Like, who were the last cuts for you?
I don't know if it was necessarily hard to leave guys off, and I don't mean to pick on him, but Bryce Brent at age 27 is number 30, so it wasn't like right. I had like guys where I'm like, oh man, this guy's unbelievably talented. You know, it kills me to leave him off. And I like Kyle Martin and Chandler Shepherd a little bit, but I mean, they're probably 6th and 7th inning relievers, and they're 28 and 29, so it wasn't like I was going with the high ceiling guys at the end. I mean, there's more guys that not so much that it was hard to leave them off, but guys I think could make a jump on there next year. You know, I think poor Christopher Acosta suffers, I think, from being part of the same international class as Anderson Espinosa. And, why don't you turn it up in low A? But, he was a guy I thought about a little bit. I think a guy I don't remember what you have Acosta. I'm pretty sure you guys have Jalen Beeks on your top 30. I thought about him. He's a guy who I think if the Red Sox made another trade, he'd probably be one of the first guys on. Austin Glorious is another one of these guys, and he wasn't drafted, but he was a non-drafted free agent who pitched a little in pro ball. It was more sounded really intriguing, but kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, I had history with Mark Breakman. I had history with Travis Lakins. Kind of want to see Austin Glorious come out and start doing it, this year before I bought in, because who is the guy? Bryce Cox. Do you guys remember Bryce Cox out of Rice?
Out of Rice. Yeah, they drafted him in about the 5th round.
Yeah, and I remember telling Jason McLeod after they drafted him, I talked to him that summer, and they were in the World Series, and Bryce Cox had the most unbelievable slider. And he was a guy who had not had a lot of success at Rice. He was a junior college transfer. Then they changed something in his delivery, like late in his draft year. It might even have been his senior year. And his slider was breaking so much laterally that the Rice had a good defensive catcher. He couldn't even catch the ball. It was like breaking from like the right-hander's batter's box over to the left-hander's batter. And I was just like, oh my God. I told Jason, I was like, I've never seen a slider like that. This guy might be in the big leagues for you next year if he pitches like that. And it turned out to be a mirage. And, he was, kind of fizzled out the next year, and that was that. But so I kind of want to see Austin Glorious do it again. I mean, I think you guys, and I think I'm pretty sure Baseball America have Kevin McAvoy in the top 30. I couldn't pull the trigger on that. I mean, I don't sit here and just obsess about the stats, but the strikeouts per innings were just too low. I know he's got a great sinker and it's a lot of ground balls. I wanted to see him, even though he's more pro experienced than some of these guys, I kind of wanted to see how it played in Double A. But he was a guy. Josh Pennington's interesting. Jordan Precision, I can't pronounce the name, Precision is interesting.
I think it's Precession, like a Precision.
Well, there you go. I was terrible. Well, that's even easier. That'll be easier to remember. Yeah. And I couldn't quite pull the trigger on him. And I do think, and I think you guys have him ranked in your top 30 also, I do think Noe Ramirez probably pitches in the big leagues this year. I think on my list, and it's a weakness, and I probably still can't stop doing it, I tend to give shorter shrift to the lower ceiling, higher floor guys. And I see Noe more as kind of that useful middle reliever. And I can usually find a guy who I can dream on a little bit more than that to put on a top 30. But so that was a very long-winded answer. But, I think gun to my head, if I had to put a guy on the list right now, if they made a trade, Jalen Beeks might be my next guy right now. The other guys, I kind of like to see them improve it a little bit more.
Yeah, the thing for me, first of all, Bryce Cox was the 3rd rounder in 2006, whose progression went from Wilmington to Portland, demoted to Greenville, And then next year, Greenville, and then he went to Lancaster in 2008, which was where pitchers went to die, basically. But, yeah, the thing for me, Jim, and I don't know if this is tough for you too, but it's trying to rank starters who project as relievers against relievers who are currently pitching in relief. You know, where you have, for example, trying to compare, say, a Williams Jerez with, you know, maybe if you think a Ty Buttrey projects best in the bullpen, well, okay, one of them is in relief right now pitching as a reliever, and one of them you kind of have to guess how he's going to look in relief. I don't know. I've always found that very difficult with those kind of guys best right now.
Yeah, and I know what you say with that. One of the things I try to do that is tough, and you're right, because Buttrey probably winds up in the bullpen. And yeah, I didn't rank him super high on my list, but one thing I try to do is I will try to give the starter, the current starter, a little bit of extra credit, because I think it's easier to put up bigger numbers and your stuff plays up, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. It's easier to look better as a reliever than it is as a starter. So I try to keep that in the back of my mind. But at the same time, you know, I think in a way too, I have a hard time just ranking even relievers because, you know, let's say Pat Light's for real. Well, I mean, then I probably should rank Pat, you know, if I really think, you know, Pat Light's going to, you know, keep throwing mid-90s and the splitter's going to continue to work and, you know, he's going to maybe throw more strikes, well, Pat Light could maybe be an eighth inning reliever and he's pretty close. And I'm ranking guys like Travis Lakins and Ronny Arodas who have barely played pro ball ahead of him. And that's probably backwards too. That's the toughest part for me is where to rank, I think, even the pure relievers versus guys who have a chance to play every day and guys who have a chance to be in the rotation but aren't locks. That's a tough part for me too.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we let you go, Jim, let's make sure that the people know how to consume all of the wonderful content that you're producing. Obviously, they can go to MLBpipeline.com. Is it at Jim Callis MLB on Twitter right now?
Yeah, that is correct. And what I try to do, I mean, the nice thing about MLB.com and MLBpipeline.com is everything's free. I mean, there's nothing behind the paywall. You can read all of our lists, all of our scouting reports, all of our articles. And I do try to, on that Twitter feed at Jim Callis MLB, I do try to, every time I have an article, at least tweet a link. So it's at least an easy way to follow what I do. And I try to tweet some of other stuff as well. And as you guys know, and I actually did a Red Sox prospect Twitter chat when we released the list. I won't claim I can keep up with every question, but I do try to answer questions and interact with people on Twitter. And I enjoy doing that. And I do think, and I think you guys, I think are good about interacting with people on your forums too. I do think when you do what I do or what you guys do and you're ranking prospects and you're listing them in order and you're saying this guy is better than that guy, you should be willing to defend. You know, if somebody says, hey, why do you have Travis Lakins ahead of Pat Light? I should be able to give them an answer. I think it keeps you honest. So I enjoy doing that on Twitter if anybody has any questions about any of this stuff.
Beautiful. And then is Callis's Corner going to continue being a thing too, the blog?
You know, that kind of put out the pasture because when I first got there, it was a lot about blogging. And now anything we would basically blog, they just want us to do for the regular website. So I used to kind of have bonus material. And I think after a few times of, hey, I'm thinking about doing this for the blog. And they're like, no, go ahead and do that for the site. The blog has not been, my last blog post might be more than a year old.
I think it's mid-2015, actually. It's the Brewers shadow draft. It looks like it's the last.
Oh, yeah, that might be
the last post.
You know what it was? I think I actually did that story for the site, but I put all of my old draft picks on the blog because I had no other place to put them. So, you know, that probably will be my next blog post will be this June if I do that again. So,
I look forward to reading it, Jim. Excellent.
Yeah, I always enjoy doing that too.
Excellent. Well, Jim, thank you so much for your time and for all the great stuff you're doing over at MLB.com and for answering questions when we've got them and when our fans have them, so our readers, our listeners. And we always love chatting. So hopefully we'll maybe be able to do it again at some point over the summer or something.
Yeah, maybe catch up after the draft. And I always enjoy talking to you guys. And trust me, after you know doing these top 30s for, I think I said 17 years in a row with doing a top 30 for the Red Sox, I use your guys' site a lot of times too. And, you know, it's a great way to prepare too. I mean, you guys, not only do I think the depth of information is good, I mean, I don't know too many other sites that go 60 deep. And I know when I'm preparing, you know, like my process, you know, I'll admit it. I go to Sox Fix and say, okay, who's on here that maybe I didn't have, who's on here that I need to put on my follow list that maybe I wasn't thinking about, you know, like a Jalen Beeks, for instance, you know, type of thing. So I enjoy your guys' stuff very much as well.
Perfect. Well, I guess we will agree to continue helping each other because it's definitely reciprocal. We definitely use your stuff too. So, once again, Jim Callis, thank you so much, man. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Jim.
Thank you, guys. It was fun talking to you. Thanks.
All right. Well, we want to thank Jim Callis for coming on the podcast. It's always a pleasure to have him on, not just because he always speaks so highly of us. We always like to speak highly of him. He does some great stuff. So check him out at MLB.com. MLBpipeline.com will bring you to MLB.com's prospect coverage. A lot of interesting stuff there, guys. I guess real quick before we go, tell people how to follow you on Twitter. Matt?
Yeah, it's at Matt Hegel, M-A-T-T-H-U-E-G-E-L.
Just like it sounds. Ian, how about you?
At Ian Cundall, I-A-N-C-U-N-D-A-L-L.
All right, and you can follow me at Chris Hatfield. At SP Chris Hatfield. I almost forgot my handle, except that I'm looking at the website right now. So, yeah, at SP Chris Hatfield, and make sure you follow the site at Sox Prospects. Thanks to Jim. Thanks to the Ludlow Thieves. Thanks to our sponsor, SeatGeek. We appreciate all of those people. Thanks to all of you for listening, for downloading. Podcast@SoxProspects.com is the email. Send us your questions, your things you want to hear about, your suggestions. We're going to record, I think, one more podcast before we head to spring training next week. So we'll have something that'll drop hopefully early next week to preview our trip down to Fort Myers. We've got some questions in the queue. We could always use a few more. We've actually got some stuff we've already recorded. So get us your questions. We want to talk about what you want to hear about. Thank you, everyone, and we'll be back in your eardrums really, really quick. And we'll see you from Fort Myers and from the sushi bar at Blue Sushi. Thanks, everybody.